Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Not easy for him to do. I thought he held up really well. I talked to him afterwards. I talked to him again today. I gave him a big old hug because I know that probably the most difficult thing he's ever done publicly or maybe ever done, period. So I give him a lot of credit for that.
Everybody in Chicago knows the voice of Joe Maddon at this point, don't they, Anthony?
You would think so.
Yeah, I would think so. Obviously, Joe Maddon talking about Addison Russell. Another fascinating situation out there. And we've got a special guest coming up. And Todd, hang on, because I forgot Evan was not working. I've got your Browns questions. It's going to be in about 10, 15 minutes. Maybe this is me being unfair, but he didn't come across well for me. Seeing the video and hearing him. Actually, I heard it on the radio first, and I thought to myself, he doesn't sound all that serious. I'm not that he's not serious. Mm-hmm. He doesn't sound like he gets the magnitude of this, and then I saw it with the video. I don't know where the kid's at this point, but I was fine with what he said. I was a little taken aback that he just didn't. Maybe it's just because he's young. I don't know, but I didn't like the way he carried himself.
It was very robotic and scripted. And I think anytime we watch moments such as this, you know, the names and images that come to mind are like, you know, Tiger Woods when he had his press conference after his fallout, or you know, even Mark McGwire in front of Congress and just seeming, you know, very uncomfortable and very robotic and having, you know, something either written out or something that's obviously been rehearsed going into it. And I would say Addison Russell he's never struck me as a great orator or a great public speaker anyway. And in this scenario where he's saying, as you mentioned, the right things in such a robotic and such a scripted manner that it doesn't come across as human. It doesn't come across with any real emotion. And you think about the fact that he's had, you know, months and months, or, you know, just depending on how we want to extrapolate the situation, you can even call it years to sort of think about how he would handle this moment when it occurred. And there was even like these weird smirks that would happen at a certain point. So obviously there's some sort of a PR or, you know, kind of a damage control company who's been working with him for a while up to this moment. And he did, I guess, what they would probably consider an effective job of sticking to the script. The delivery was certainly, you know, didn't come across as human in the way that they would like.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. Now, this is almost certainly going to get me in trouble, but just to explain where I'm going with this, with my wife and I, and by the way, we have a great marriage. It's going on 40 years now, so it's all cool, guys.
Yeah.
But married people argue, you know, and every once in a while we'll get in one of these fights where I'm comfortable because I know this time I didn't do anything. I didn't deserve it. It's okay.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, or quickly sometimes, she'll say she's sorry. But I don't want to hear you're sorry. I want to feel that you're sorry, you know. Now, I don't know how you do that sometimes, but sometimes it's easy, you know. And I didn't feel it with Russell on Friday. Now, maybe that's not fair, and maybe I'm wrong. And somebody who would know a lot more about it than I do is Evan Altman. Evan covers Chicago Cubs for CubsInsider.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Devin Altman. And I'm sorry, at D. Evan Altman. Just to be clear, it's Evan Altman, but at Twitter, it's at D. Evan Altman. And Evan, thank you so much for coming on. This was not the main reason we wanted to talk this morning, but since we kind of started there, and since you're CubsInsider.com, and I'm sure you were all over that story, any thoughts, any take on what we saw and heard from Addison Russell Friday and where you think he might be at and where he's headed?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would, and first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate jumping on here on Sunday morning. And, you know, I would echo a lot of what you two both said. I don't think anyone should have expected Russell to come out and suddenly, you know, speak with the same kind of fluency that we see with Theo Epstein or that we would hear much in terms of the way of actual factual admissions. He really can't, I think, from a legal perspective. But, you know, the way I equate it, I think we've all been to, you know, a wedding or maybe a high school graduation where a speaker got up there and they were clearly reading from a script. They're not comfortable up there. But you can still tell, say it's the best man somewhere, that there's some emotion there. It's heartfelt, even if he's not delivering it well. And I missed that completely with anything in Russell's little speech there. If you saw it on video, and I think, Hub, that's what you mentioned, was kind of comparing the words with actually seeing the delivery. Mm-hmm. It really did feel like there really just wasn't any emotion. It was the same four or five answers kind of repeated over and over. And he didn't seem to be speaking. He's not a great orator, like you said, but he didn't seem to be speaking in the same manner that he normally does. And I think that, for me, is what threw me off. And you know, now it's really incumbent upon him to take that, whether he was robotic and scripted or not. But he's really got to put in the work, and he's really got to show the actions, because at the end of the day, that's all that's really going to matter.
And Evan, having Theo, Jed, Joe all there at the press conference and all there with Addison Russell at the beginning and as it's taking place, how did you and how do you at this point sort of depict the Cubs' tenor of the situation? We've heard Theo speak fairly directly about the hurdles that lie in front of Addison Russell before he ever takes the field again for the Cubs. You know, the probably least amongst those at this point would be the 40-game suspension that's been levied to him. But then beyond that, the steps that they have in place for him to essentially prove himself that he's worthy of rejoining the club in an actual regular season game. So where do you see the tenor of the franchise as a whole as it relates to Addison Russell?
Yeah, it's, you know, had this been an isolated incident, and I don't mean Russell's activities in general, I just mean the topic of Addison Russell, had that been really the only PR issue the Cubs were dealing with this winter, I think things would maybe be a little bit different. They'd have perhaps a little bit more leeway. But when you consider everything that's been coming out and the issues they've had dealing with Alderman Tunney, the emails from Joe Ricketts that have come out, it's been this kind of PR nightmare all winter, not to mention the fact that they really haven't made any major moves. There's a financial stuff going on. So I think they are, I don't want to say they're on eggshells, but I think they're going to be even more judicious, even more careful than they normally would have, because they know that they don't have any real margin for error at this point. I think they really need to impress that upon Russell. I think they need to be really careful with that and how they address that themselves publicly and kind of what they're saying about it. You know, Madden spoke about it yesterday. A lot of people didn't really care for that. So, I think they're kind of anxious about how this thing all plays out, and rightfully so.
You know, Evan, one of the aspects of this that nobody's talking about, or at least I haven't heard or read much about it, in 2016, Addison Russell was a near Gold Glove level shortstop. He was a 21 homer, 95 RBI guy. And in the two seasons since, I'm not going to say he's marched backwards, but he's kind of slow walked backwards. And then all this comes out. You have to assume that what was going on in his personal life, you know, even if it didn't bother him, would have some effect on his ability to perform. My guess is that one of the things the Cubs would be thinking is if he can be rehabilitated and if he does genuinely become a better person, that he probably becomes a better ball player too, just by having all these outside elements out of his life.
Yeah, I mean, any time, and I think we've seen this, and the Cubs are certainly as cognizant about this as maybe any organization in sports, about how the mental side of the game and just psychologically what's going on in that regard, how that can impact on the field. You know, you kind of wonder as well how much of the pressures of just being a young ball player in Chicago with the Cubs and kind of being in that fishbowl is impacting things as well. And that's, you know, I've advocated for a while that it might be in his best interest to be traded, to be released, whatever the case may be, and maybe to be in a different environment where it's not as pressure filled. And I certainly don't want to offer any excuses for any of his behavior, but I do think that a lot of times these things result from acting out. You know, there is pressure that builds in one area and kind of is released sometimes in a very unhealthy manner in other ways. And so you just kind of wonder how that all fits together. And if perhaps, if he is able to rehabilitate from a personal perspective, if that does help him, although it's something I suppose the Cubs have to be banking on, because they've certainly kept him around for a reason.
Evan Altman is a writer for CubsInsider.com. You can find Evan on Twitter at @DEvanAltman. He continues with us here this morning with Hub Arkish and Anthony Heron on 670 The Score. And one of the reasons I was excited to have you on this morning, Evan, was to talk about a piece that you wrote for Cubs Insider just a few days ago about this deal between Sinclair and the Cubs and the Marquee Sports Network that's upcoming, because it was, you know, it was a fairly informed dive into how this grew over the years and got to this point and what it potentially means for the ball club. And one of the things that stands out to me about is when you think back to, you know, WGN and the Cubs getting out of that deal in 2014. And now, how will carriage likely work? What are the Cubs seeking from a carriage standpoint? And how does that perhaps not jive with what Major League Baseball would usually allow?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And I think that's the biggest key over the next year, right? It's going to open officially in February of 2020. And you know, to this point, it's been fairly simple as far as, you know, their coverage area and kind of the methods that they use. I don't really want to say actually simple is probably the exact opposite. If you're a fan who's kind of outside of Chicago and has to maybe realize every third game is going to be on a different channel and maybe you have it or you don't. So this does consolidate all the games or all the non-national games in one place. But the next step is, how do they get Marquee available in the various markets throughout their territory, be that DirecTV or Xfinity, you know, Comcast, Bright House, whomever you might have, but then also the streaming channels like Hulu or YouTube TV and even Amazon, some of those other streaming television services, and then whether and how they can actually keep that from going outside the territorial market, because that's something Major League Baseball has controlled really closely, and it's the reason the Cubs had to go with a broadcast partner like Sinclair rather than perhaps going with Amazon or a major provider that is streaming everywhere, because Major League Baseball wants to protect the interests of its smaller markets, other teams, and as you surely know, there's some areas in maybe Florida, Arizona, a lot of retirees that would much rather watch the Cubs than the Marlins or the Diamondbacks, but Major League Baseball wants to prevent that. So how the Cubs are able to grow that and maybe get outside the bounds of baseball's previous territorial restrictions is going to be a really, really interesting topic for this new network.
This hour on The Score is brought to you by Pearl Vision. Nobody cares for your eyes more than Pearl. Evan, I don't want to mix, you know, our politics with our sports, and I'm not trying to here, but I think it's a fair question. With the recent and there's nothing recent about where Joe Ricketts stands. I mean, if you follow it at all, you know what his political beliefs are. And with some of the heat that Sinclair Broadcast has taken in the last year or two, and I don't really know much about Sinclair Broadcast. It may be fine, but this is what's been in the news. Do the Cubs risk piling on themselves by making the deal with Sinclair at this point, so fresh after, or actually, I guess it was almost at the same time as the revelations about the Ricketts emails?
Yeah, I mean, I think any time, you know, and you can, again, you can throw in their very vocal support or detraction from local politicians goes all the way up to the mayor, right? There have been some battles there, which, you know, you kind of come to expect. And when you take those things all as isolated incidents, it's one thing. But then as anything else, you sort of add these things up. And as you mentioned, and some of the other PR struggles we've mentioned here this winter, it's really kind of hard to separate those things individually and look at them as just isolated incidents. And when you do have a large broadcast network like Sinclair that has some political leanings that do align with the Ricketts family, it's really hard to separate those things out. Crane Kenny talked the other day and was very adamant about the fact that the Cubs would control 100% of the programming on the channel. That would be similar to the tennis channel that does not have any of those political leanings that you see with maybe some of the local stations Sinclair operates. So, you know, again, as we said with Russell, though, words are one thing, and how those actions and how these things kind of roll out over a period of years is what's really going to tell the story. But absolutely, the timing of all this is not it's far from ideal for the Cubs. I guess we'll put it that way.
Are there lessons that the Cubs have been able to glean from what the Yankees have done and what the Dodgers have done, both pro and con?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the Dodgers, I think, were the really big one, and that's something that the Cubs have used as a, you know, kind of the major pitfall of that. I mean, you can go back 3 or 4 years because they've had these discussions about their own network for at least the last 4 or 5 years, ever since the original deal with WGN ran out, and they knew they would have to find something. And the Dodgers had signed theirs a few years ago. And then, as we talked about, you know, the issue with carriage fees, not being able to get into half the market in Southern California, and you left a lot of Dodgers fans in a lurch despite making a ton of money. And I think what the Cubs have said is obviously they do want to find new revenue streams and make a whole bunch of money off of this deal, more so than they had made in their current deal. But at the same time, they don't want to freeze out half of their fans and leave themselves in that lurch. And so, again, I think the Dodgers is really, that's the mold that they put out there. But both of them have shown, you know, when we look at those top payrolls, we look at the flexibility those teams have had in the past, even though they've pared that back a little bit these past couple years, I think that's what they're looking at, is being in that major market, having that presence, and then really ideally being able to push that brand into some new places with Marquee Network and kind of make it more than what it's ever been with their broadcast deals with WGN or NBC Sports Chicago.
Evan, if you're anything at all like me, and we're visiting with Evan Altman from CubsInsider.com, follow him on Twitter at DEvanAltman. If you're anything like me, you get frustrated when you do a 20-minute interview and all you get to talk about is social and political issues or business issues. So I want to take you to the team for a moment here. I have been taken aback by some of the negativity surrounding the prospects and hopes for this team this year. And one thing that jumped out at me in particular in discussing this with some fans on the air here over the last couple of weeks, and I talked to Gonzo about this because it didn't make sense to me, but there's this perception that the Cubs farm system is suddenly completely bereft of talent. It's one of the worst in baseball. They had great prospects. They've used them all up. There's no help coming. I don't think that's the case. I know Mark Gonzalez agreed with me. The problem is that while there is some really exciting talent, it is all still a year, two, maybe three away. Would that be your take on it? What can you tell us about where the Cubs farm system is at right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see anything really to disagree with there. I think what you're seeing is there's a groundswell of talent. Most of it, though, unlike what we saw with that series of guys when they came up, you know, when we were looking at Javier Baez and Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber, these were all very clear top prospects, guys who just rocketed through the minors for the most part. You know, some of them, again, Javier, Albert Almora took a little bit more to develop, but these were guys who you could peg and say, this is going to be a major league superstar. And we haven't seen that as much, particularly with the pitching, right? All those guys I just mentioned, they're all position players. They're all up already. And so sometimes it takes a while to bake some of these prospects up, if you will. And so I think the Cubs have a lot of pitching. There's a lot of guys to get excited about, but none of them are particularly in that range where you'd say, oh, this guy you could point to and know he's going to be a number one starter or even part of the rotation. So it will be a couple more years, and then I think people will start to realize, you know, while there might not be a ton of all-stars in that group, you're going to have a whole lot of serviceable major league players, which, you know, doesn't really excite the fans all that much, but those are the guys that fill out your roster that are getting those key hits that are really helping you to know what other needs you can fill. And so that's going to be, I think it's going to be one of the topics, and we'll see a lot of that. The pitching is going to start impacting this roster probably second half of the season, but I think next year and beyond is where we're really going to see those new results.
And Pakoda came out and said the Cubs are basically going to be a 500 team, finished last in the division. So they seem to be taking, since the Cubs didn't bring any real new, you know, no major transactions over their offseason, over the winter, that came in to really enhance things. And their assumption is all these guys who are on the current roster aren't really going to improve over what we saw last season, and the pitching staff is really old. So Hub and other Cubs fanatics, I'm sure, are thinking the opposite, that the guys are going to improve. Where do you sit with it? Do you think that Pakoda is kind of on point? They're going to be a 500 club?
No, and you know, I kind of wonder about some of the stuff with Pakoda, and you know, I'm not going to throw any shade.
Oh, at, call him out, Evan. Call him out.
I'm just saying, you know, and I think those of us who have maybe written a headline before that was maybe a little sexier than the actual post implied, you know, because you want to draw people to it. If Pakoda's picking the Cubs to win 90 games and finish first or second in the division, are we having this conversation? Do millions of people even know? Is anybody talking about Pakoda? Of course not. So when the Cubs are only going to win 80, oh, that draws a few eyeballs to baseball prospectus, right? So I don't know where that standard deviation falls and kind of what the actual mid-range or maybe the high end of their projections could be. But I think it's obvious. Look at that team last year, right? How the offense, quote-unquote, broke. How they only won. They stumbled to 95 victories with Chris Bryant missing a third of the season, more than a third of the season, and being unhealthy ever since the middle of May, at which point he was on pace to have his best offensive season of his career. We're talking about an MVP and Rookie of the Year. So getting him back healthy, having Wilson Contreras not have just a brutally bad offensive season down the stretch, those alone are going to account for several more wins. And then you think about the maturity of some players like Ian Happ and Albert Almora coming around, Javier Baez being close to what he was, and if Yu Darvish is healthy, right, there's every reason to believe there is a ton of room for improvement on this team. But at the same time, they don't have a lot of margin for error. You mentioned the pitching staff's a little older. You know, some of these guys, we've seen it before where players peak early. So is it possible that they could be about the same? Sure. And about the same is 95 wins. So I don't think there's a whole lot to hate outside of the fact that they, as you mentioned, have not made any really discernible improvements to the roster that they had.
You know, Evan, I'll let you go with this one. I used to get into this with Bernstein all the time because he's a sabermetrics nut, and there's others out there. And I think I'm saying the same thing as what you just said, is that there is value to all this information. There's no question about that. But there's also a there's a flip side, which is that most people don't even realize that WAR, wins above replacement, which is everybody's favorite one, is not a black and white formula. I mean, there is a subjective component to it, and it comes out differently depending on who's calculating it. And so right there, it can't be something you live and die with. And you know, this whole Pecota projection is based on the idea that when pitchers pass the age of 34, they trend downwards. Statistically, that's a fact. That's accurate. But it's not every pitcher, you know, and that's the part that people miss. And so I don't know what the Cubs are going to be this year. The NL Central is much better than it's been in as long as I can remember. The competition is going to be fierce. There is a chance that the Cubs could struggle because there's these old pitchers. There's also a chance they could have the best starting rotation in baseball or two or three All-Stars. And that's why I just don't get all the gloom and doom, because based on what they've done the last 3 years, there's no reason to assume that things are suddenly going to go south.
No, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, again, we think about all these other things and think about just the mentality of fans in general. And a lot of times I think you look at standing pat as moving backwards, especially based on, as you mentioned, what the other teams, and especially the Reds. You know, I keep answering when somebody tells me who concerns me the most, it's the improvement the Reds have made, because that takes away several games that normally you could chalk up as easy wins. But yeah, I think people get caught up in these projections, and you know, a projection for Chris Bryant last year didn't have him hurting his shoulder. Projection for Yu Darvish didn't have him hurting his elbow. Nor can they project all of a sudden a breakout like what Javier Baez had when he just went to the top of the MVP charts for most of the season. And so there's so much that's going to fluctuate on one side or the other that you can predict production to an extent. You cannot predict, you know, human behavior. You can't predict injuries. You just can't predict baseball accurately. So just as we could look at the doom and gloom side of things, we could look at the other side and say, well, gosh, what if X, Y, and Z happen, and then all of a sudden this is actually a better Cubs team than we've seen for 3 years. So it's one of those things, just like anything else we've talked about. You got to wait for the action on the field to play out before you can actually tell what's going to happen.
Evan, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us. Outstanding article the other day on this Marquee Network. It was what kind of rang the bells. We said we got to get Evan on with us Sunday to talk about it. Appreciate the information. Thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday morning.
Hey, no problem at all, guys. Thanks for having me on. Have a great rest of the show.
Thanks, Evan.
Evan Altman, guys. Follow him at CubsInsider.com. You can follow him on Twitter at DEvanAltman. We got to go to a break, Anthony. But before we do, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that makes me crazy. I was hosting last week. I forget who we had a baseball expert on, you know, somebody who I asked for because he really knows baseball. And partway into the interview, he says, well, one of the reasons the Cubs aren't going to be as good is because there's no way Javi Baez can be as good as he was last year. And I said, well, time out. Why is there no way Javi right. Baez can be as good as he was last year? And he said, well, because he had a career year. I said, he's 25 years old.
I was
going to
say, what is he, 25 right now?
I mean, he, most people are projecting him getting better, you know. No, it can't happen. Why can't it happen? Well, you know, Pecota says this and say, you know, advanced field, blah, blah. Goodbye. You know, that's kind of the end of it for you. Guys, we're not predicting another world. I shouldn't say we. I'm not predicting another World Series. I'm not predicting anything. I'm just saying,
yet.
You know, let's use our heads here. Yeah. You know, let's look at the facts that we have and base, you know, our conversation, our analysis on that.
It feels odd to me because I certainly wouldn't have thought this before last season, but Javi Baez from a lineup standpoint is probably the guy I'm most confident in right now. You know, he's the guy who in the last three seasons, I feel, has gotten better and better every single year. Now, you know, like Evan Altman was just telling us, you know, part of where Chris Bryant is right now is the injuries have certainly hampered what he's been able to do at the plate. And there was a year before last where the power numbers dipped over the MVP season. So I, you know, if he's healthy, there's no reason to assume Chris Bryant won't be the Chris Bryant we expect him to be. He does need to stay healthy, though. It's been 2 years of you know, some fatigue and injuries and those types of things. And Rizzo's been up and down. He eventually became the Anthony Rizzo. But every year over the last three seasons, Javi Baez has become a better in the infield. He's been the exciting guy every year. At the plate, he's gotten better and better each of the last 3 years. Javi's the guy I'm probably most confident that we're going to see another monster season from.
You know, Anthony, the reality is when he was striking out 43% of the time, it wasn't going to work. He was also 22, 23 years old. Last year, I believe he struck out 23% of the time, which still sucks.
Yeah.
But it was also good enough to be second in the MVP voting. You know? And there's no reason to believe he's going to go back to striking out 30%. He's probably going to maintain that or maybe even cut back on a little bit more. So we'll continue to talk about it. We'll talk about whatever's on your mind. If it's sports, if you want to talk Chicago Bears, NFL, Chicago Cubs, White Sox. I haven't touched on the White Sox yet. Blackhawks kind of messed the bed last night, but they still won 9 of 11. We can talk about that. 3 points out of that final wild card spot. All-star break. Not much to talk about the Bulls. Lauri Markkanen didn't exactly stick out in the futures game. NBA, not a great subject around Chicago. But if you want to talk about why it's not, we can do that too. 312-644-6767. Give us a call. Let's talk sports here on The Score.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have been providing affordable, winning hockey for 25 years. Celebrate today at 3 as the Wolves host the Iowa Wild at Allstate Arena. Enjoy free parking courtesy of Kia and discounted concession items. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. Anthony Heron here alongside the great Hub Arkish on a Sunday late morning around brunch time. Perhaps you are just returning from a workout, returning from church, returning from a night on the town, perhaps. You know, Saturday nights can get a bit late and then become early before you know it in the city of Chicago. So we're glad that you're listening to us at this point, just after the bottom of our so we're hour and a half into it. It tends to fly by when I'm with you here, Hub. It's been fun so far.
It does, and I'm having a great time, and hopefully we will continue to get to do this more often. I got a text here, and I want to try and make a point here. And this text is from the 847 area code. It says, Russell is old news. Let's talk more Sox and the next Babe Ruth in quotes. Maybe history repeats itself for the Cubs. First Lou Brock trade, now Eloy for Quintana. So here's my point, okay? We love our text line, 67011. You give us ideas of things to talk about, but you don't get to text and dictate the content of the show. If you want to talk about it, the phone number is 312-644-6767. Give us a call, and we will talk about it. Otherwise, all I will tell you is that it can't repeat itself because Jose Quintana is not Ernie Brolio, all right? I mean, yeah, Lou Brock was a Hall of Famer. It was a horrible trade. Eloy Jimenez has not taken his first major league at bat yet. Jose Quintana hasn't been bad. He hasn't been as good as some Cubs fans hoped. That's as much as you get. You want to talk about it? Give us a call. 312-644-6767. We're going to get to Ron on the south side in a second. A half an hour or so ago, we had Todd, the Browns fan. Right. We didn't forget you, Todd, and I know you. You're still listening. So here we go. And Anthony, I don't know how you feel about this. Todd had laid out his needs for the Browns as, I believe he said, cornerback, offensive tackle, and inside linebacker.
Sounds accurate.
Well, yeah, you know, but Todd, I think that, I know that, and this is my first opportunity to mention it, by the way, and I hope you grabbed a copy. There's some right outside the door, Anthony, but our Pro Football Weekly 2019 NFL College Draft Guide is out. We got it back from the printer. If you want to go to Amazon, you can get a copy right now. Just go to Amazon, look for the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide. It is the number one seller there. It'll cost you a little bit more. It's $10.99 at Amazon. That's to get it early. It will be available on your newsstands on March 6th for $8.99. Basically, and this isn't me, this is Pro Football Weekly invented draft coverage. We started doing it in 1968. I was 15 years old, so obviously it wasn't me, okay? But did get into it a few years later and have been doing it longer than ESPN. Mel Kiper was an advertiser of us, ours at Pro Football Weekly in a different business before he got into being a draft guru. Yeah, so
let me hear the story of your hostile takeover of Pro Football Weekly at some point.
No. It was actually my dad who started the company. So
okay, that explains it.
Yeah, it was a rite of passage, and sadly, he died very young, and so I ended up doing something I was not in the least bit qualified to do. Screwed it up six different ways, but somehow we're still here 40
years
later.
Still here.
At any rate, though, our draft information has been rated number one for ever. Again, I'm not the guy who does it. Actually, one of our lead authors, Greg Gabriel, a regular here at The Score, is now our lead scout. Over 30 years of NFL scouting. You can get your Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide right now at Amazon. Look for it on your newsstands on March 6th. And the reason I mention that is that 32 pages of it is we take each team and we go over their needs. And so the Browns do have needs in those areas, but we had as their number one need pass rush because Myles Garrett looks like he's going to be Myles Garrett, but he's pretty much been it for them. Mm. And it will make the cornerback play better. They do need another cornerback. Inside linebacker. I don't hate their linebackers, to be honest with you. They clearly need help at offensive tackle. And Todd, in answer to your question, it's kind of a bad year in free agency, period. You know, there is some tremendous talent in pass rushers, which I think is their best need. The problem is that Jadeveon Clowney is not getting out of Houston. Jamarcus Lawrence is not getting out of Dallas. You know, maybe a Dee Ford moves from Kansas City, although I doubt it. Ziggy Ansah is going to move. I don't think the Lions are going to pay him, but now you're taking a 30-year-old with repeated knee problems. But there's some talent there.
Is your impression that Clowney will likely get franchised and sign it?
Well, I mean, he has no choice. I think Le'Veon Bell's proven that, and he doesn't want to be out of football.
Yeah.
But the Texans have already said we're not letting him out. They'll try and do a deal. The Texans got set $65 million in cap space,
okay.
So they can make a deal. Their issue is going to be how do you pay him in comparison to J.J. Watt?
Yeah.
Now, Whitney Mercilus has not been the same since the knee injury, but maybe he just needs another year, so you're going to have that issue as well. You're very good at inside linebacker now with Penadrick McKinney. He's going to have to get paid. They got some other people that are going to have to get paid, and they have big needs on the offensive line too. But, Todd, if ever there was a year you weren't going to go looking in free agency for an offense. Now, the one guy I thought by the end of the season, Anthony, that the Trent Brown was the best left tackle in football. And he'd never played the position until Belichick got his hands on him. He is a free agent. You would think the Patriots would want to keep him, but remember they traded up to draft Isaiah Wynn last year, and then he lost his rookie year, and they drafted him to play that left tackle spot. Belichick's the only guy in the NFL with the balls for that kind of thing. He'll take the chance. He'll let Brown move. He'll go with Wynn. So I don't know if Brown's going to be available or not. Now, it's going to take a ginormous contract to get him, but I don't think they can get any help there. So I would think that where they'd want to be looking is at pass rush, at inside linebacker. And then, you know, they've still got plenty of draft capital. You got to draft your offensive line, at least this year, because I just don't see much in free agency.
And to the signing of Kareem Hunt and adding him in with Nick Chubb, you know, Nick Chubb was proving some things in the league last year. And, you know, the ability to run the ball, the ability to stay healthy. You know, he'd had a knee injury when he was in college, and that had some folks concerned as he came out. But I think it will make sense because you know there's no reason to not feel good about where the Browns were at from a running back standpoint, but to you know just sheerly from a football standpoint to add in Kareem Hunt to take some of that load off, you would think you know for a guy who played better as a rookie than I anticipated Baker Mayfield playing, and now you can have a running game that will continue to take some load off of a young quarterback. You know, he set a touchdown pass record for rookie QBs. And then I think a lot of Browns fans can probably anticipate that he will continue to play well. And I think if his maturity holds up better than I anticipate it will, then he is likely to continue to play well. There's no reason to think he won't be able to build on that rookie season. But that doesn't mean that suddenly you try to make him into the second coming of Peyton Manning or what Tom Brady eventually became. You can think back to early in Tom Brady's career. He was not the Tom Brady he eventually became. He was a guy who was enhanced by a ground attack and by a ball-controlled approach and by a defense that constantly kept them in games and made plays. And so I think that's where you'll see John Dorsey try to build it in that manner as opposed to saying we will just trust the right arm of Baker Mayfield to lead the way and take us through games. And I think that that's where adding depth at running back at, you know, from the statistics of Kareem Hunt, you know, tangibly, it's a bargain value they're getting for that position for a guy who's been as substantially successful early in his NFL career as a runner and a receiver as Hunt has been.
My problem with the Kareem Hunt deal is that he is the NFL's version of Addison Russell. Now, you know, different crime. I mean, with Addison, it was his wife. With Hunt, it was a stranger, a 19-year-old girl that apparently, you know, called him a horrible name and you know, for a 5'10", 218-pound incredible physical specimen to think the way to react to being called a bad name is to shove down and then kick a 19-year-old girl is pretty sad.
Yeah.
the difference between him and Russell is he has not yet done anything to deserve a second chance. I mean, he said he's sorry. He said he wants to be a better person. But I've done a little homework on this, and everybody's still waiting to see what his program in place is going to be like the Cubs. Right now, you know, he's talked to a therapist apparently a couple of times. That's all you know. Now, I get what John Dorsey is.
And it is not a single solitary, you know, let's use the air quotes, incident that, that Kareem Hunt has had either. There are other allegations and things that he's been involved in with melees at night spots and things of that sort.
As far as we know, it is the only incident of male-on-female violence, mm-hmm. but there were two other assault charges within a couple months of it. So obviously the young man has an anger management problem. Mm. And you know, I understand part of what Dorsey is thinking. John Dorsey is the GM of the Browns. He's from the Cleveland Akron area. We're going to bring him home, have him around the right, you know, in the right situation. All that's fine and well if he wants to be a better man. And he's got a lot of work to do there. We don't know what the NFL suspension is going to be, and there's going to be one. Now, you know, whether it's going to be the alleged 6 games that is mandated, they haven't stuck with that since they put the policy in place. So I don't know why it's a policy, but could be longer, could be shorter. There's all kinds of stuff to come with it. To me, it's just a bad look. It wasn't necessary. You know, somebody was going to pull the trigger fast, but to pull it that fast, especially with Nick Chubb there, that's the part of it, Todd, I don't understand.
Well,
I don't know why they felt
Dorsey
the need to
do it. Draft him when he was in Kansas City, correct? Mm-hmm. And so for him, and you know, you've been around the decision makers, the personnel men, the general managers in the NFL longer than I have, and there's an emotional attachment that's with those draft picks as well. You get to know these prospects as you're evaluating them, and you know, in a way, some of it, you know, while from a recruiting standpoint, when you're going from high school to college football, you know, you're recruiting the player, and the player gets to make the decision. When you're drafting a player, that's usually, unless you're a Manning, out of the player's hands from a draft standpoint. So there was a bond that had been developed there that ended up, you know, being the reason that John Dorsey used a draft pick on Kareem Hunt. So it would seem that whatever emotional bond and level of attachment that's still there, you know, similar fashion to Matt Nagy saying he'd reached out to Kareem Hunt and, you know, just cares about him as an individual and that sort of thing, that's still there. That seems to be the tie that binds them, even in addition to Hunt being from the Cleveland area and you know, what the fan base may do as far as in reaction to that and, you know, embracing him into their warm arms.
All right, Anthony, 312-644-6767. We're going to get to the phone lines. Ron is on the south side. Ron, I am doing a great job of screwing up the clock here at the station this morning. I'm going to be late for the next break. So what we want to do is we want to get your question in, and then we're going to take a quick break and answer it. But I know you've been hanging on for a while, so thank you for that. What can we do for you this morning?
And actually, I'm really, really enjoying the show, guys. But my thing is real quick. You know, one of the things that's a problem with these signings, I'm thinking about the White Sox. Because one of the things they're looking at is Yoán Moncada, you know, going to third. So I want to, you know, ask you all, do you all think it'd be better for him in spring training? Because we know that the Magical will be coming. That's your second baseman of the future. Should they just put him there right at third? And another thing, too, is that people easily say, well, if Moncada comes, if Manny comes, you can move Tim Anderson to center field. That's just not as easy as it seems, guys. That's one of the crucial position in baseball up the middle. So just a couple of things. I'm just ready to talk any kind of baseball. So those are my couple of things. Maybe y'all can comment. Thank you very much.
Right, before you go, though, quick question. Mm-hmm. I missed one part of what you said. You said somebody's coming at second base?
I believe he's meaning Manny Machado.
No. Magical is going to be the second baseman. They pretty much know that he will be coming, and that's going to be your second baseman. So if that's going to be your second baseman, then Yoán Moncada may as well start at third base. You know, this right now, that's what spring training is about. Why have him over at second base? So that's pretty much it, guys. Oh, and then lastly, can I just say one more?
Sure.
I'm very optimistic about him. And then we cannot at this point make a decision as far as how that trade turned out. Again, Yoán Moncada was number one prospect, highly touted, and he struggled. I don't think Jimenez is going to do that. Baseball's a tough game, guys, so let's wait and see how this plays out. Thanks.
Ron, thank you very much for your call. Just maybe a quick response, then we can pick it up on the other side of the break. You know, Magical may be coming, he may be not. People project these kids in the system, and the reality is that most of them either don't make it or become very average players, okay? That's number one. Number two, Everything I've heard, Anthony, is that defensively Moncada is too much of a liability on the left side of the infield, because people have been talking about this for a while. And again, I'm not a baseball expert. This is based on baseball experts I've talked to or heard discuss this. It's part of the problem with Moncada. And quite frankly, it's the only question about Jimenez. These guys are professional hitters. Everybody's comfortable with that. But Jimenez is at best a mediocre right fielder right now. Now, he's young. He seems to be a good athlete. He can get better. Moncada is, you know, he's one of these guys who's a 4 or 5 tool players, but his tools don't perfectly fit most positions. And so my understanding is that that's why he's at second base. And that's a problem with Magic Holtz coming. What do they do with all these guys?
And, you know, to the point he was making about maybe Tim Anderson moving not just to the outfield, but to center field. Yeah, that's asking a lot. He's an athletic guy. But to put him at the most important position in your outfield, where you need to be able to track balls accurately and on time in both directions. And, you know, we know what we saw Adam Engel do a few times last season. You got to go up and try to snare passes before they get over the wall at different points. There's not just the athleticism aspect of playing center field. It's about a feel because it's, you know, it's essentially your free safety type of position where you need to be able to have eyes and timing and anticipation on where the ball's going to go. You're not only the one in position to make a play, but if your left fielder or right fielder doesn't make the play, you need to be in position to be there to field the ball if for some reason they end up coming up short or coming up long or misjudging it. Those calculations don't just happen where you just get suddenly moved from the infield to the center field outfield position at the major league level with any ease.
All right, we got to take a quick break here. I got another thought on that. We're going to pick up the White Sox talk in just a moment on the other side. Our phone number 312-644-6767. We are back in a moment at The Score.
I think it's very well grounded. So anybody who has a decent perspective on life, I think always has an opportunity and a chance to survive all the hype, so to speak. Most of it, as I tell the players, most of it is for the fans. It's for the people that are outside of the arena, so to speak. And we understand that. And it's good for us, and it's good for baseball, and it's good for, you know, everything that you guys do.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. Visit Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Schaumburg, February 22nd to the 24th. The nation's largest upland hunting and conservation expo focuses on bird dogs, wild game cooking, and hunting heritage. With over 400 vendors and great seminars, Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic has something for you. Visit pheasantfest.org. That was Ricky Renteria that you heard there. Talking about Eloy Jimenez, the Babe Ruth in the story of, you know, how the transaction has gone and getting his rights and adding him to the Chicago White Sox system. I suppose the Babe Ruth trade probably still goes down as one of the most, in retrospect, boneheaded in Major League Baseball history, because you had this generational talent, this multi-generational talent that Babe Ruth ended up becoming, and Red Sox had him and decided they didn't want him anymore. Had him as a pitcher and a hitter, and then Yankees said, you know what, we got the greatest hitter ever, let's make him a hitter. I don't know if that's what Eloy's going to be, but Hub Arkish and Anthony Herron continuing that discussion here at the bottom of the second hour that we're spending together.
Well, and you know what's interesting about it, Eloy Jimenez is the tip of the iceberg. He's the number 3 prospect in minor league baseball right now, and Ron called before, he was talking about Nick Madrigal, who they just drafted. I mean, we don't know what Madrigal's going to be. Right. I mean, you got Yoan Moncada, who was the number 1 prospect in baseball a couple years ago when they traded for him. Here, and you can't escape the Cubs-Sox comparisons in this town. No, whether you want to or not, don't bother trying, you know, because that's and this is not about, you know, me being a Cubs fan or a Sox fan. This is a reality that people on both sides of town need to finally understand and address, which is that what the Cubs did was an absolute fluke. To have 5 straight number 1 picks become the player, it doesn't happen in baseball. Mm. And the fact that, and some of these guys, now people are a little disappointed because, you know, Ian Happ isn't anything special. I mean, Ian Happ may be a pretty good hitter at some point. He's a decent fielder, but I never expected him to be a superstar. I'm disappointed that Kyle Schwarber hasn't developed, you know, quicker than he has. Now, again, give him
the other Babe Ruth in this town a couple of years ago.
ACL, you know, lost a year, and so he can still get better. I absolutely think Wilson Contreras is better than he was last year, closer to the player we saw the year before. But my point is, everybody's assuming because the Sox are doing this and because they traded these players and brought in these kids. This is a historical fact that the only teams that have ever been successful with this whole rebuild philosophy are the Cubs and the Astros. They've each won 1 title, and if they don't win a couple more, people are going to be pissed and they're going to give up on it. You know, and so I get this whole, you know, the whole rebuilding concept of be bad so you can be good. The Pittsburgh Pirates have been doing it for 25 years. You know, it doesn't work that way. You know, and I hope for my friends who are Sox fans that it does work for the Sox. I can't imagine anything that would be better for both Cubs and Sox fans if we ever had a Subway Series, or even if we just had a year where they were both contending for being the best teams. That'd be great. Yeah. You know, there's nothing negative intended at the White Sox here. It's aimed at Sox fans who need to understand just because you're doing this doesn't mean you should reserve your World Series tickets for 2020. You know, we'll see what happens. Yoan Moncada at this point is becoming a bit of a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they stole him. I mean, it was a great trade. You know, I take that back. That was not a great. That was a Chris Sale deal. I'm thinking of the center fielder that they got all that pitching from the Nationals from, Adam Eaton.
Oh, okay.
That was a steal. Mm-hmm. Although the way Giolito is pitching, who knows? We'll see about that too. Which I guess is my point. You know, you get these guys and you think, oh man, now we're set. And look at Luis Giolito. I mean, maybe he'll still be a great pitcher. Last year, I believe he had the worst earned run average in baseball. You know, so, I mean, you got to wait. You got to let these players develop. And then when they become great players, then you start talking about, well, what can he play? Where do we position him? How do we build the best lineup around him?
And you've got to focus at this point on what's at the major league level or on its way to the major league level. And so where, you know, we can assume with a level of confidence that Jimenez will be at the major league level and Cease will be at the major league level this season. But beyond that, for guys who have just been added to the system to start moving pieces around with the assumption that guy is going to be with the major league ball club in the near future and that he's going to be performing well there. So to start to move guys out of positions you've been training them at, that would be a bit too presumptuous, I think, for the White Sox in this plan that supposedly they have in place. And I think overall, we've seen teams in the city. I mean, aside from the Blackhawks, who had their three Stanley Cup titles coming into when the Cubs went through their rebuild, every other club in the city, every other organization, every other franchise in the city went through some sort of a rebuild since the Cubs did it and won the World Series. The Bulls are, I mean, I don't know, depending on how John Paxson's willing to describe it, you could almost say this is like the second rebuild in the last 3 years because we're seeing different versions of how this is working out. And the Bears very quickly, as you and I have talked about in great detail, have been able to work their rebuild. And Ryan Pace had the opportunity to sort of grow and improve on the job, and he did it and reshaped this roster. And the White Sox have certainly are in the midst of this now once they finally made the decision to put both feet into the rebuild waters. And it seems like, and I talked about it at that time, after the World Series season and some of the other teams in the city started to do it, that now the expectation is set for the fan bases of every other club in town that if they go into rebuild mode, which all of them have at this point, that it's going to lead to a championship and it's going to happen quickly. And the patience of the fan bases of the Bulls and of the Bears and of the White Sox. And, you know, we'll see, you know, maybe the Blackhawks here in the near future too, although, you know, this season at least has some positive signs going. But that the patience of those fan bases for a rebuild will be tested, and it's certainly being tested now.
All right, so we're going to take another quick break here, and Mike is on the phone. Mike, you're going to be next, I promise. This is just a couple minutes. But one other thing to tee up some phone calls, 312-644-6767, something you just said, Anthony, touched a nerve with me. John Paxson is one of my favorite people in sports, in Chicago, in sports, period. We're not close. You know, he knows me. I know him. Last time I saw him was 10 months ago. It was a quick hello. We don't know each other well. I'm not pretending, you know, we're friends or have any you know, dog in this race. I really admire the guy. I have no clue what the Chicago Bulls are doing right now. I mean, I keep trying to figure it out. And I just,
there's got to be a plan, right?
You would think, okay? But every time Jim Boylan does an interview, I say to myself, really? This guy's the head coach? You know, so we'll talk about it in a moment. 312-644-6767. You've got the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.